Good morning. It's good to see you this morning. It is every time we come together, of course, and we certainly do that. And for those that are visiting, and we're certainly glad you've come our way, and we're thankful for you. And then those that are watching at home, we thank you for watching. And I find that the Forrest Bowen family is somewhat sick today, and so I know where you are. There's a hidden thing in that, and so there's a little message. But I love it. I love the folks that we have here, and really, I do hate the fact that we have so many that have been sick lately. Today, I want to talk today about a phrase that we know and that we recognize, and yet at the same time, I want to call some emphasis to it, kind of in the way that, Justin did just a few moments ago about what I promise means. Okay, so in 1 John 2, it says this, "Do not love the world nor the things in the world, for if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. The world is passing away, and also its lust. But the one who does the will of the God will live forever," or lives forever. And so this is a passage that we know. We know that the world has its tentacles everywhere, and that they have been in us, and they are trying to entangle us again all the time. And we know that, and we recognize it. And yet, as we were talking last week, we talked about Ezekiel and that God was looking for a man to fill the gap, to step into the gap in the wall when there's a time that we have that need, that the wall has been broken, that our connections are not made, our protection is not as safe as it was, and that he couldn't find one. And then if we look beyond that moment and we understand that God sends a man that can stand in that gap, and that man is Jesus Christ. He's the one that was able to come and stand in the gap and to stop the forces that were outside. And he teaches and heals, he gives hope, and then eventually dies. And then he's resurrected with the promise that we can be resurrected. And that is our hope. That is our hope. And so from that message, and I want you to see this, at the time it was given, the world came to Jesus to hear this message. They came wanting it, wanting to have hope when there has been no hope, where all there is the drudgery of life and all that goes with that way. And we recognize some of that. And yet, they come. And today, it seems like we don't come. 1 Corinthians 1 says, "Paul, called as an apostle of Jesus Christ by the will of God, and Sosthenes, our brother, to the church of God which is at Corinth, to those who have been sanctified in Christ, saints by calling, with all who in every place call on the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, their Lord and ours." Now in this is that sense of being called, is a calling of, or an invitation by God to come to me, come to my ways, come to my kingdom, come to love being the basis of our camaraderie, and not greed, which is in the world. Greed is in the world, and that's where those things happen. And then I want what I want. I want position. I want whatever. And as we think about those, we know that that's the case. And yet this is really now, you know, and it's not right at the beginning, but it is near the beginning here of when the Corinthians are there. Okay, that they are called, those that have been called, you see, they are the ones that have been sanctified by Jesus Christ. Okay, and all of those who do that, call on the name of the Lord. Well, there's a sense in there's a calling to us, and then there is our calling in return. That I, based on what I've been called to, that I extend a calling of my own, do I not? And I want to say that goes both to God and to men, and recognize that the commonality of each member of the Lord's church being called to it offers some challenges as what we think about the calling. Now, I want to suggest to you that that calling is to your mind. It's up here. The Christian heart is the mind, and we need to remember. So as we're called that way, this is what Ezra did. For Ezra had set his heart to study the law of the Lord and to practice it and to teach his statutes and ordinances in Israel. Now, if I could make a definition of what Christianity is, would be exactly this very same statement, only based on the words of Jesus Christ. That I want to know what the Lord said, and by the knowing of that, that I want to be able to bring that to the place where I live, and I want to be that person. I want to study that and practice it myself to teach His statutes and ordinances in the United States of America, in Chipley, Florida. And so, when I say that the calling is to your mind, I actually mean that you're being called to a mindset. You see, it's not simply that I believe that there is a God, that I believe that He has the right to tell me what to do or any of those kinds of things. Even though He does, He has that by His own power and might. No, He calls us to the mindset that I want to serve that God, that I want to be like His Son. I want those things that I would match then Jesus' mindset. Now, what was Jesus' mindset? To stand in the gap. I'm going to be the one that will stand in the hole that's in the wall. Where men can't seem to find their way, I'm going to show them how to do that. This is the way. This is how you stand in the gap when there's trouble afoot, when there's trouble in the church, when there's trouble in your family, when there's trouble anywhere. This is how you're going to stand, and that we would do that. And so that we are then, our scripture reading says, we're called out of the world into this mindset that gives us strength and power against the world for the sake of God. We're called to fellowship with God. That we are called His sons and heirs. You see, that you couldn't be called of anything higher on this earth than to be called the son of God or the daughter of God. And so if we have that and we have fellowship with God, and our fellowship is sustained by the things that we do and the way that we act, and our acting is based on how we think. And how we think has been set by the mindset that we have of what our thinking should be. And so we do that. And then we just use one verse, Romans 12:1. We're called to crucify ourselves. This is not about our pleasure on the earth. This is not about the things that men are caught up in. This is about doing the will of the Father on the earth. Okay, and so as we understand that, we crucify ourselves by giving up the worldly goals that we had for the sake of fellowship with God, and we will sacrifice the things that we might have had in the world for the knowledge of God, for the knowledge of His love, by the knowledge of His power, and by the knowledge of His acceptance. Now, if I sideline on this just a little bit, you understand that if I'm looking for that as my mindset, then what my rewards are going to be something completely different from what they used to be. My rewards are not the gain of money. They're not the gain of ease. It's not the gain of power or recognition. It is in the pleasing of my Father. That I do a job and I do it well. That I'm about His business every day. That I'm thinking about Him. I'm doing the things He would have me do. I'm over there on a regular basis, what would God have me do today? And then I've got something that I'm going to do for God today. I've got something to do today. I don't simply exist in God. I don't simply bask in the fact that I'm His son without any responsibility for being His son. I can't say that I'm His son when I don't act like my father does. I can't do any of those things, which we see in the human world all the time. We have children who don't look anything like their parents because they've never been taught. Only in this case, you can't blame your teachers. It is your responsibility to learn to be a child of God. It is your desire, your mindset to do those things. And so when we come to that and we see it, we recognize that I am going to crucify myself for the sake of God. I started in Romans 6. It says, in the case of those who have once been enlightened and tasted of the heavenly gift and been made partakers of the Holy Spirit and have tasted the good word of God and the powers of the age to come, and then they have fallen away, it is impossible to renew them again to repentance, since they again crucified to themselves the Son of God and put Him to open shame. Now then, I'm asking the question. Do you do that? Do I claim that I have God, but when He requires of me to do something that I need to do, that I won't do it, okay, and by doing that action, by refusing to be the son that I should be, I am declaring that God has no rule over me, and that I am a master of myself, and in the doing of that, I crucify Christ again. Said that he died for no reason. And why? Because I won't do what God tells me to do. I only do what I want to do. That's an ouch. My death here is at my own hand and for gain, you see. If I don't put the world away, I crucify Jesus again. If I don't maintain the mindset of the slave of righteousness, then I return to the world. Romans 6 tells us what this is supposed to be. You see, do you not know that all of us who have been baptized into Christ have been baptized into His death? Therefore, we have been buried with Him through baptism into death, so that as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, so we too might walk in the newness of life. For if we have become united with Him in the likeness of His death, then certainly we shall be in the likeness of His resurrection. Knowing this, that our old self was crucified with Him in order that our body of sin might be done away with, so that we would no longer be slaves to sin, for he who has died is freed from sin. Now, if we look at that and we really understand what it's saying, is that I symbolically agree with what Jesus said and did, that He is the Son of God, He has the right way, He has the methodology that I want to live by, that I want to change myself to be like Him, and therefore I'm going to be baptized to symbolically go under the water to be buried, because I am killing the old man to rise in the newness of life that would be the life eternal that God would have me be and do. That's what I'm doing. And that when I do that, you see, I killed myself, you'll say. I crucified self. That's what it's talking about. To be raised in the newness of life. And then once again, for those who think you don't have to be baptized, excuse me, but if that's the case, if you go into the water and you're a sinner and you're putting away your sin to raise to a new life, when did the blood of Christ take effect? And there can only be one answer to that. In the act of what you're doing, you showed that you believe that Jesus' way is better than this way that was. I want the new way that is. And that's what we do. That's what we do. And so, in Galatians 2:20, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. The life of which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself up for me. So, you see, we have a life of worship, meaning that I give up who I would have been for the sake of being like unto Christ. Okay, and he loved me enough to give himself up for me, and now I love him enough to give myself up for him. So that it is he that says that we are acceptable before the Father. He is the one that goes to the Father and pleads our case. He says, this one loves me. And God forgives our sin. It's a beautiful thing. I follow the example of love given by God, which ended in Jesus' sacrifice of his life for us. Or I'm going to choose the world, which is all about me. And so the real truth is, what I'm saying is that when we do all these things, we are really finding a new mindset. It's not about what you think. It's not about what you want to do. I find that as far as our actions and controlling self and being a moral person, that almost everyone agrees along those lines that we need to be that person. And then I find that the sense of being benevolent and that I should give to others because Christ gave unto me, that lesson seems to be an automatic, and that we will give. Now, I think there may be some who have tighter fingers on their stuff than others do, but I pretty much think that we all understand our giving process as because I owe. What I've received in the forgiveness of sin is worthy of me giving up something of calling possessions. But I'm not really talking possessions. I'm talking about time as much as I'm talking about that. I'm talking about thought and mindset, the time for prayer, the time for worship, the time that we spend, all those times when I put that ahead of the things I might do or could have done, I declare the Lord. And I think that stuff we do. What has become difficult is to talk about it, is to talk to other people about what I believe, because people seemingly don't want to hear it. We've got some shouters out there that just run down every good thing that can be said sometimes. If you haven't seen it on social media, it's all over social media, the bashers that somebody says something, trying to do something nice, and somebody just comes on and bashes them for what they're doing, and shame on them. And I struggle with that, and yet I understand what it does is that if you think you're going to be beat up, then why would I speak? Why would I talk to a group of atheists about God? You see, there's the sense of that we have been beaten up enough that we don't know who wants to hear, who doesn't want to hear. We don't want to talk about it. And I think that this is a place where we have to not listen to the world. That I need to have my conversations with and about God. With God because I need to talk to God regularly, but I also need to talk to men about God because it helps me. It helps me refine some things. This new mindset then took me from the days of fear into days of fearless. But that doesn't come without a price. It's going to take some of the beatings. I've asked the question a number of times. Paul, 5 times I took 40 stripes less one. Okay, 5 times he takes 39 stripes. I understand the first one. I said something and I'm tied to a post and I got 39 stripes for it. That's hurt. 2, 3, 4, and 5. Excuse me. He knew it was coming. And yet he spoke anyway. Do you see, there's a fearlessness in that. And that's my point. We're not going to be beaten. The worst somebody can do to us today is words. Okay, and yet we won't speak many times, and I want us to see that I think that we should, because we are the influence, and I'm not saying that we're going out to tell people what they ought to do. I'm saying we need to go out and tell them why I believe. That's what I need to say. Okay, and so I followed the example of love given by God, which ended in Jesus' sacrifice, and again, my mindset is a new mindset. Okay, my worship is to offer reverence to the divine being, and that reverence is my reverence. Now, we've talked about this before, not too long ago, that the only one that worships for me is me. And therefore, I believe what I believe, and I need to declare what I believe in my worship. And that we need to do that in the right ways. And what I mean by that, if you feel like that you need to bow your knee to pray, then bow your knee. You know that the positions of prayer are many. They would raise their hands, they were prostrate on the ground, and everything in between. But whatever it is that says that I believe in God and that I acknowledge Him and will and worship Him, I need to do those things. I need to be about those things. They need to be regular enough that I convince myself that my new mindset is at play. Not something that's in the future, not something that's going to happen one day. It is in play today. Okay? And so under those terms, and when he had taken some bread and given thanks, he broke it and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." What is it that we are to remember? Are we remembering simply the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ? We are not. We are remembering all that led up to the recognition of a Messiah, a plan that went on for hundreds of years, that it may be that we would recognize who the Messiah is and not with Him saying, "I'm the Messiah." No, He comes and He does and He acts in a way that has already been foretold, a kingdom like no other kingdom, a man like no other man, a man who will stand, and He doesn't stand like we do. He stands in a way that other men don't stand. He doesn't fall down and say it's okay for you to say something that's wrong. No, you can't say that. That you misunderstand the scriptures. And he would make a statement, but it wasn't unkind. Well, people got angry with him, and they do, and I understand that. But do you understand? Now he has told us, do this in remembrance of me, that I may have the mindset that he had in this world. And not somewhere else, in Chipley, Florida. And so that we might be an influence there. So we remember because Jesus, he is the one that stood in the gap and brought man back to God. And he did it by showing us what it looks like. And now we know what it looks like. Our daily reverence for God should be then seen by those that are around us, and it should offer a reason why other men would seek God too. I'm going to go get, there was a time I preached a sermon. It had to do with Moses, and it was called A Series of Lessons from Moses. And I said, you know, Moses was ready to be the leader of the Israelites when he was 40 years old. And of course we know he kills an Egyptian and he flees, but he doesn't flee because he's afraid. He realizes now's not the time. God's not going to make me the leader now. And then 40 years later, when he's 80, God calls him with the burning bush. "I want you to go down and I want you to go lead my people." He says, "Yeah, I hope you find the guy." He doesn't have that desire anymore. And so I said, you know, you never know. All of us that are getting older, that your job on the earth may not begin until you're 80. And we had a member of the congregation named Tommy, who's a very good friend of mine. He was one of the older men. He said, "Daryl," he said, "I generally like your preaching, but today you got to meddling." Well, I want to meddle just a little bit. Do we meddle, or am I meddling if I were to say that when we go about and complain about the life we have, the fears we have, the disease I have, whatever it is, and I know those things just are overwhelming. I'm not taking away from that. We were put here not for that reason. We don't worry for those things. When we're a little short of money, a little short of time, do we complain? Do I look for somebody else to do my work? Do I look for somebody else? Do you see what I'm saying? That instead of me carrying my own load, I want someone to carry it for me. And that's not what Jesus did. Every day, he knows who I am. And I'm setting the example of how to stand in the gap. And I stand in the gap in a positive way. I'm one of the Lord's children. And I want you to know that. And that he helps me, he will help you. That kind of a thing. The kind of leadership thing. Because you see, that daily reverence that we have should provide an ongoing calling for the Lord. I want to be like that guy. I want what he's got when he hasn't got much as far as physical things. But he's got something else going on that I want. See, we want to provide the example of what one called looks like. That we should be enviable on the surface because it's genuine within us. It's something that people should see and they say, I want it. I want some of that. I want what he's got. And so I ask you the question, when we bring all that together, what do we look like in the world? What do we look like to them? I'm going to read Proverbs 1, and I want you to go with me because this covers a long list of things, but it is right on the money about what we're talking about. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understandings, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. We will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us, and we shall have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way of them. Keep your feet from their path. For their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, it is useless to spread the baited net in the sight of any bird. But they lie in wait for their own blood, and they ambush their own lies. For they are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. Wisdom shouts in the streets. She lifts her voice in the square. At the end of the noisy street, she cries out, and the entrance of the gates of the city, she utters her sayings. How long, O naive ones, will you love being simple-minded? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. Turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit on you. And I will make my words known to you, because I called you and you refused. I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention. And you neglected all my counsel and did not want my reproof. And I will also laugh at your calamity. I will mock when you dread, when your dread comes. And when your dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when the distress and the anguish come upon you, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would not accept my counsel. They spurned my reproof. So they shall eat of the fruit of their own way and be satisfied with their own devices. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But he who listens to me shall live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. Now I know that from this, you see what a mindset does. And that the mindset that those that are out there that would give us trouble, that would make fun of us for who we are and what we do, those people mean nothing because they don't understand anything. They are not men of wisdom or people of wisdom. They don't care about wisdom. They are interested only in what I want. Their definitions are my definitions and mine alone. And those kinds of things just don't work. Our distinctiveness then will be directly proportioned to the mindset we have when we came to God. Now, I want you to think about that. That at the day you decided to become a Christian, the day you decided to be baptized into Christ, you said, I'm not good enough, but I want to be like that. And I don't care what it costs. That's what you said. I'm going to go there. And you did. And I want you to understand that when you did, you made yourself able to be recognized as not like the world. The maintenance of our faith in our hearts is imperative to the fellowship with God. There are some things that are being said in the religious world today, and even out of the Christian religion, that I just can't go along with, you see. The fact that God's going to understand every bad thing that I do and accept every sin that I make simply because He gave His Son and He wants to save people, it is not about that that causes God to save me. It is because I care enough to be like His Son. I have a mindset of the Son, an intention like that, that is unafraid, that will take 39 stripes 5 times. I'll take that. I'll run the risk. Even if it costs me my life, I will do the thing that I need to do. And why am I going to do that? Because I believe that this is the right way. This is what was the example of how far you must go. And it's going to be unto death. And it's going to be unto death whether it comes by natural causes or unnatural causes. Are you going to believe or are you not going to believe becomes the question. And so are you going to maintain, I will give myself up to death even. Well, we're not surrounded by death anymore, you see. Death in the New Testament was a common thing. People didn't live to 80 years old. Between disease and work and slaughter and all kinds of conquering and things that went on, you know that many died young. There are those who come to God without wanting to participate in the worship services or the work that God has given us to accomplish. They want to come and be a part, but they don't want to do it. There are those who do not want to know more than the minimum than it takes to just avoid hell. I just want to know enough so that I can survive. No. This isn't that way. For those of you that know the Little Rascals, I find this to be an interesting picture. Now, we watched them and their little ways, and they were hilarious to me as I watched them in their escapades, we'll call it. As I look at the older version of them, and they're still young, are they the same people they were when they were those children? And then I'm going to ask you the real question, are you? Are you still the same person you were when you began? With all the things that have changed in our lives, all the circumstances, all the experiences that have effect on us, are we the same people today that we were 20 years ago? And no, we are not. How is it then that we learn to have relationships that last a lifetime? Because we are willing to move with change. And so you see, we must see that if we're not committed to do all that God requires, if we weren't that person when I began, then I'm probably not that person today. But if we came believing that there is no risk in serving God, then when challenges come, you see, we would freeze. If our faith is based on someone else's encouragement, we will eventually fall. We can't let our mindset be decided by fear or by desire. It can't be based on what someone else does to or for me. It is my decision to make of who I'm going to be. Jesus made that ultimate sacrifice. I've always believed that Jesus' greatest sacrifice was leaving heaven and coming here. What he did here, absolutely. But Jesus' patience with men, with this lack of understanding, or the faith to believe in a true way, and he, the whole time he was here, he had to deal with that. And that Jesus sacrificed for all men, even though we were all sinners. That everyone, even the ones that believe in me, are sinners. They don't hold to the course. And yet he loved them anyway. He continues to help us. With all the sin that he has seen, all the promises that have been broken, and in spite of the sheer numbers, he still pleads for men to be saved. And he continues to love the Father, and he loves who the Father loves. And so, I ask you now, have you been called? Where are you in the calling now? Do we still listen to the world and its desires? Do we have enough maturity to maintain our faith? Do you have an obstacle you can't seem to overcome? Is your mindset one of, here am I, send me, or let someone better than me do it? I want you to look at this picture, and I'm asking a real question. If we were on those steps ourselves, would your head be down? Now, it looks like his hands are folded in prayer, and if they are, what would be his mindset? What would be our mindset? And so, I want us to realize there are real moments in our lives, the moment that we believe and the moments when we prove what we believe. And now, do you approve of yourself as a Christian? And if not, why? And I want to offer this. I've been truly affected by the Israelites' lack of returning to God in a real way. That over and over and over again, they keep going back to other gods when their God has been so true to them and they don't see it. Do I think that we're different as people? I think people are people. I think there always have been. That there is a tendency for that. It takes encouragement of ourselves, within ourselves, to accomplish our faith. So, it is not in some big thing that we prove our faith. I think it's in the whispered thing. The constancy of our faith. It is in the soft encouragement, you can do it. It's in the conversation of following God makes sense because he said to. It's the soft hand, the soft word, the patient manner that God is exalted. Let your mind be set. Be one in which you were called. The one where you would do anything God asks if He will only forgive your sin. Let you live with Him. That we may be concerned by the fate of other people as well as our own, and in the same manner. May we be those people, and then we have the calling. If you haven't accepted the calling, there's no time like today. All things are ready. And if we have an issue that we need to deal with and we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and sing?